Yena,
Yena,
by whom?
Svarochisha,
by his own effulgence.
Vishvam,
all the world.
Rochitam,
already created potentially.
Rochayami,
to manifest.
Aham,
I.
Yata,
as much.
Arka,
the sun.
Agni,
fire.
Yata,
as.
Soma,
the moon.
Yata,
as also.
Riksha,
the firmament.
Graha,
the influential planets.
Haraka,
the stars.
Translation.
I create after the Lord's creation by his personal effulgence, known as the Brahmajyoti. Just as when the sun manifests its fire, the moon, the firmament, the influential planets, and the twinkling stars also manifest their brightness. Lord Brahmaji said to Narada that his impression that Brahma was not the supreme authority in the creation was correct. Sometimes less intelligent men have the foolish impression that Brahma is the cause of all causes. But Narada wanted to clear the matter by the statements of Brahmaji, the supreme authority in the universe. As the decision of the Supreme Court of a state is final, similarly, the judgment of Brahmaji, the supreme authority in the universe, is final in the Vedic process of inquiring knowledge. As we have already affirmed in the previous verse, Naraji was a liberated soul. Therefore, he was not one of the less intelligent men who accept a false god or gods in their own ways. He represented himself as less intelligent, and yet intelligently presented a doubt to be cleared by the supreme authority, so that the uninformed might take note of it and be rightly informed about the intricacies of the creation and the Creator. In this verse, Brahmaji clears up the wrong impression held by the less intelligent and affirms that he creates the universal variegatedness after the potential creation by the glaring effulgence of Lord Sri Krishna. Brahmaji has also separately given the statement in the Samhita, known as the Brahma Samhita 540, wherein he says, Yasya prabha prabhavato jagaranda koti koti svasesha vasudadhi vibhuti bhindam tad brahmanish kalamanantam asesha bhutam govinda mari purusham tamahagujami. I serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Govinda, the primeval Lord, whose transcendental bodily effulgence, known as the Brahma Jyoti, which is unlimited, unfathomed, and all-pervasive, is the cause of the creation of unlimited numbers of planets, etc., with varieties of climates and specific conditions of life. The same statement is in the Bhagavad Gita 14:27. Lord Krishna is the background of the Brahmajyoti, Brahmanohi Pratishtaham. In the Nirupti, or Vedic dictionary, the import of Pratishta is mentioned as that which establishes. So the Brahmajyoti is not independent or self-effulgent, self-sufficient, excuse me. Lord Sri Krishna is ultimately the creator of the Brahmajyoti, mentioned in this verse as Svarochita, or the effulgence of the transcendental body of the Lord. This Brahma Jyoti is all-pervading, and all creation is made possible by its potential power. Therefore, the Vedic hymns declare that everything that exists is being sustained by the Brahma Jyoti, Sarvam Idam, Sarvam Kalvidam Brahma. Therefore, the potential seed of all creation is the Brahma Jyoti. And the same Brahmajyoti, unlimited and unfathomed, is established by the Lord. Therefore, the Lord, Sri Krishna, is ultimately the supreme cause of all creation, Aham Sarvasya Prabhavaha. One should not expect the Lord to create like a blacksmith with a hammer and other instruments. the Lord creates by his potencies. He has his multifarious potencies, parasya shaktir vivihaya shuryate. Just as the small seed of the banyan fruit has the potency to create a big banyan tree, the Lord disseminates all varieties of seeds by his potential brahmajyoti, sorochisha, and the seeds are made to develop by the watering process of persons like Brahma. Brahma cannot create the seeds, but he can manifest the seed into a tree. And just as a gardener helps plants and orchids to grow by the watering process, the example cited here of the sun is very appropriate. In the material world, the sun is the cause of all illumination, fire, electricity, and the rays of the moon, etc. All luminaries in the sky are creations of the sun. The sun is the creation of the Brahmajyoti, and the Brahmajyoti is the effulgence of the Lord. Thus, the ultimate creation, cause of creation is the Lord. So Brahmaji is making this point that it's correct that he's not the supreme controller and the supreme creator, that Krishna is that person. So here then is getting into the detail that this is happening through the Brahmajyoti, the Lord's energy. Brahmajyoti means the Lord's energy, it's the existence potency. So that means everything is based on that. There's not something separate. Because something can only exist if it is sitting on the existence potency. Otherwise, how it will exist. So the Brahmajyoti pervades everything. Everything is resting upon it. So the material energy is also Brahman. It's coming from Krishna. Inferior, but still Brahman. So all the manifestations of it are also therefore resting on Brahman. So this Lord's energy is what is pervading everything. So Brahma is able to create from the Lord's energy. It's not separate. Because only the Lord manifests his energies. Then from those energies, they have specific purposes of what they can do. And then, operating those potencies, then everything manifests. Right? Does that make sense? Like the person has created the machines, and the machines create the product. So someone can operate the machines, but they're not able to create the machines. Does that make some sense? But that's basically what's happening. The Lord has created actually the whole universe. The concept of it is all created in the primary stage. Taking that, then Brahma, with the potency of the Brahmajyoti, then manifests the universe and all its variety. So this is what is going on. So in doing this, here, the question is that Brahmaji is what we can see. Brahmaji is who we can know is actually creating things, is doing things. But Narad has a doubt, because if he's the creator, why does he have to sit and meditate? Why does he have to be austere? Because from austerity, then comes result. Because if he's actually the supreme, then that means austerity would come from him also, so he does not require austerity to create. So this doubt arises, but at the same time, he makes the point is, we can only see that everything comes from you. Right? We can't see that it's coming in any other way. So because of this doubt, then he presents that. And then Brahmaji then properly clears that doubt, that it can't be, it is the Lord's potency that I am creating with. The Lord has created everything, but not manifested. Then, using those same potencies, then Brahmaji manifests that. And that's what's going on. So this is the proper platform. So here, then, we're making the connection between the Lord, his Brahmajyoti, then from the Brahmajyoti, to everything else. Here it says, okay. Means all the luminaries are coming from the sun. Sun's coming from the Brahmajyoti, Brahmajyoti's coming from Krishna. So everything functions. The sun's not there, nothing works. Right? So it's the central feature. It's the representative of the Brahma Jyoti in the universe. Right? That is the point. The Brahma Gayatri that is respecting that point, that is from the sun that the Lord's potency is manifest. So, like this, but that's coming from the Brahma Jyoti. So, from that, we will get the forms. Does this make any sense? Okay. So, here, the Lord Himself doesn't have to do it Himself. He doesn't have to make it Himself. He's not out there picking up a little bit, a handful of dirt, mushing it around, blowing on it, and then voila, we have somebody. Right? And then somehow or another wasn't complete, so then he's got to, you know, take a rib and then create something else. You know, so it's not working like that. It means through his energies, he's perfect. And then if you manifest those energies automatically do their activities. Right? So these activities manifest as the cosmic creation. And then Krishna interacts with his energies, or the cosmic creation. And that's what is happening in the universe, or in the cosmic creation. So, he doesn't have to separately do this, right? It's automatic. It's not that he has to sit there and think, well, I'm sitting here all alone in this big, you know, space, and how to fill it up, it's a bit boring, and well, what could we do, you know, well, we could have this, you know, we could sit around, and but since we're alone, maybe we could sit around with someone else, but we're going to sit, maybe we could do some activities, and what activities are there, and then slowly, slowly, he works out everything. No, it's by his personality, everything's already complete, it already exists. But it's not manifest, right? Krishna says, never was there a time when I did not exist, nor you, nor all these kings. They were always present, but unmanifest. So when Krishna expands his energies, automatically all these manifestations take place. Right? It's simultaneous. Therefore, then he is the cause of everything. Though everything already existed within him. But now it exists where we can be conscious of it. Otherwise we're not conscious. Means the living entities, when Mahavishnu breathes in, they're residing in Mahavishnu. But they're not conscious of it. So it's only when they are conscious of it, then they can appreciate the variety, the difference. It's also said when you sleep, the Shushupti, the deep sleep, at that time, the living entity is actually merged back into Mahavishnu. Right? So that's the position. That's why also probably one gets the best benefit out of that sleep, because you're in association with the Lord. Right? But then again, we awake, and then we notice what is about us. So in that position of Krishna being Atmarama, we will not be able to appreciate this. And therefore, it doesn't expand the Lord's happiness. But you bring the two together, then it becomes very nice. Right? The Lord manifests the potencies. We're conscious of the variety. We're conscious of Him. And then He interacts with it, with His potencies. And that makes everything very nice. So this... Yeah, and then the final example is given of the tree, the seed in the tree. The seed contains everything of the tree. Everything's inside it. So the Lord's creation, everything is then inside the lotus of Brahma. Brahma simply, by his tapasya, and that then that lotus is nourished, that it grows into the universe. So this is the principle. Any questions on this? Yes,
sir. You're speaking about sleeping and the deep sleep goes back to this.
Dreams. Okay, so his dreaming state, is that also in the state of Mahavishnu? No, that would be on the lower stages. Because that would be within this universe. That would be more like, because the universe of form is where all variety takes place. And so the dream, simply you're taking various elements of the creation and putting them together. So that would be happening on the platform of Garbhodaksha Vishnu, not Mahavishnu. Like that. So it would be different. That's why it's not, because you're dealing, because of activity, there's not rest. Right? Rest means no activity. So when the mind is active, then there won't be as much rest, because the mind actually burns more energy than the body can. Like that. So if there's so much anxiety or so many things one's thinking about, or the sleeping is disturbed by dreams, then the rest is not very great. Does that make sense? Yeah, time is also subjective, because you can be, it's just like the, you know, typical cliche is that you're going somewhere and the child asks, when are we going to get there? Oh, after, you know, a few hours. And then about 3 minutes later, then they'll go, are we almost there yet? You know. So it's because it's relative. But if they go out and they're playing with their friends, you say, oh, we have to leave now. Oh, can we play a little bit? Okay, but you have to be back in half an hour. Somehow or another, that half an hour was only about 2 seconds, and their half an hour is not up yet. So they're actually being cheated that you're calling them in after what we'd call a half an hour, but they call a few moments. So for them, then it's you know, so it's perception. So then on this is that the state may be short or long, but the perception is what you will notice. That is the important thing, because perception is what we will function from. Right? I mean, as we've discussed before, that there's a concept that perception is everything. So that's used by the impersonalists, that's used by those who, you know, this kind of contemporary, you know, psychological thinking, is that the perception is everything. But it's everything to the particular individual. So it's true in that state, but there is a bigger picture. There are higher levels of perception. So to perceive the higher levels of perception, that must come from shabda, must come from authority. Then we're able to see our reality in connection with a greater reality. Then we can make the appropriate adjustments, because then it comes into proper balance. You know, let's say, like in a drama, someone has a very small part, they just come on, say one line and leave. But there will probably be the same amount of anxiety and preparation and everything in their own mind to do that part as the person making the lead role. But if they think they're the greatest person in the drama, then it's a problem. But in their perspective, that's what they're doing, so it's very important. It takes up all their life, they're remembering their lines, walking down the street, you know, they're imagining how they're going to walk on for 2 seconds and walk off without tripping, and, you know, all these things. But if they then with pride bring up to someone else how great they are in this drama, the other person may point out that, hey, you're only on the stage for, you know, 3 seconds, while this other person happens to be on for the full 2 hours. You know, so that's the importance of shabda, is the perspective has to come into the proper perspective. Right? So the real perspective is God's perspective and God's devotees. So the God's devotees we can appreciate, because God's perspective we can actually achieve. Right? We're trying. You know, we're trying, people are trying very sincerely, but they're not necessarily getting there. So, therefore, it's through the devotees, or through the spiritual master, through the scriptures, that we can actually understand God's perspective. Then it becomes very nice. Because it's a combination. It's not just that it's God's, or it's just that it's ours. It's the combination. That's relationship. Therefore, achinta veda veda tattva. Simultaneously one and different. Our perspective is it's different. God's perspective is it's one. So when these two are combined, then you get the most intimate of the interactions, because it's the combination of these both perspectives. Right? So that's there. You get... It means you can have just it's one, but then the difficulties will be people can make the mistake that we're God. If you say it's two, then there's no mistake that we're God, but then interactions may be disrupted. So that combination then makes it work fine. Right? So in this way then, time is also one of the elements of perspective. So it may be, you know, by the clock, according to our time, very short, but in experience it may be very long. Because the experience is actually what you put down to the value. It's not the time. You know? It means time is something by which we can judge an activity, or the activity can be performed. But actually our endeavor is for the experience. You know? That's what we want. So ultimately then that element of the mind must be accepted. And that must also be seen when we're dealing with things. If that can be accommodated, then we understand. So therefore, instead of being sharp with the children, then you try to find some way of distracting the mind. Because just because it is only 2 hours, and for us 2 hours is nothing. You know, every day we drive 2 hours somewhere, so driving 2 hours today is no difference. For the child, it's a long time. So because that is their perspective, because they're a child, that's understood, and then the relationship deals with them on that platform. But it's not that we take or accept the child's perspective as the reality, as is the modern concept, like that, or the impersonal concept. So that's not right. They have to be combined. This is the mistake, that it must be right or wrong. No, it's a combination of both. It's black or white. No, it's a combination of both. It's left or right. It's a combination of both. So, but the appropriate how to combine that we get from Shastra. Otherwise, we'll speculate, and then the modes of nature will just push us around. So we will be doing something that is established by God, but it may not be human. That's all, you know, like that. That's the uniqueness. Is that okay? Is that something else? Or?
You mentioned that when it does come, it almost supreme. Because if he's supreme, then what he has to meditate.
Uh-huh. Okay, so a question comes up about meditation, that if meditation's the causes the doubt that Brahma has to meditate, then what about in Dwarka where Krishna has to meditate? Or doesn't have to, he likes to meditate. He gets up in the morning. But as we notice, between the two, the meditation is the same. They're both meditating on Krishna. Right? So therefore, that would mean that the support means by meditation one's getting one's result, right? By the tapasya. By the meditation one's getting results. So therefore, we can see that Krishna is the cause. Right? So in any case, whether Krishna is getting his results on his, you know, by being himself or by meditating upon himself, it doesn't, for this argument, it doesn't matter, because the point is it's Krishna who's the cause of result. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the, you know, Krishna is so nice that even Krishna likes meditating upon himself. It's nice. So, I mean, if God does it, it can't be all bad, you know. So. Something else? Yes.
You mentioned about the association with the Lord in the state of security. I think this apartment is available to all people. And that type of illumination we do not feel in the chanting. After the process of chanting is over, we do not feel the illumination of those particular processes to the same extent as most commonly we would feel in the situation.
How can we understand that after the devotee chants, he doesn't feel as rejuvenated necessarily as a non-devotee who slept well? I see. The point is just for discussion's sake, how often do the non-devotees sleep well? You know what I'm saying? That's considered a rare thing. If someone had a good night's rest, it's rare. That's why people go on vacations, supposedly to get a good night's rest. But then the problem is stay up all night partying. They worry about their business. They worry about the family. So it's really rare, just as a point. The point is there is that there's no distraction. There's no distraction. There's nothing disturbing the mind, so it's clear. So if in chanting, then the mind is not distracted by anything else, it's just absorbed in the holy name, then not only will you get as much rejuvenation as a good night's rest, but you'll get more. Like that. So that's the point, is that it's not a matter of why they're getting, we're not. It's a matter of if you're the principle. The principle is if there's focus, right, then you can get results. If there's no focus, you don't get the results. So if you're not, if the sleep is not undisturbed, you don't get result. And if the chanting is also not undisturbed, you don't get the result. But the difference being is that even the chanting in a disturbed state, you'll get unlimitedly more benefit than a disturbed sleep. So in any case, you're getting more, right? And if you actually take it further, the person's had the good sleep, and it lasts about as long as he's sitting on the bed and stretching and yawning and going, wow, that was a great sleep. And then, you know, as soon as he starts his activities, then immediately he's reminded of his normal life, and all that goes out the window. While for the devotee, whatever benefits he get, whether it's very complete or not, is eternal. Right? So ultimately you can't make the comparison. But if it's just a matter of refreshing of the mind, from the material point of view, is whenever there is focus, the mind will be satisfied. Right? Because the mind has to be dependent. Right? It's feminine by nature. So unless there's focus, there's nothing to depend upon. So the mind can't accept or reject something. So if there's focus, the mind is satisfied, then you get results. So that's a general principle of just how the mind functions. What we always must remember is that spiritual benefit, even though not complete, has substance. So a material benefit, even if complete, doesn't. Right? So the point being is it's not what the devotee is doing, what the karma is doing, it's whether you're following God's method properly. Right? Even if you want to do something material, a devotee wants to do something like, you know, dig up his garden. He still has to have the focus and know what he's doing, right? He's not going to go in there and successfully dig up his garden using a toothpick. You know, he's going to get in there with a proper shovel. And unless he has focus, he could dig up his garden and the neighbor's garden, or he could, you know, dig up the water line and cut the electricity. You could do so many things in that. So only when he knows what he's doing, he's focused on that, then it works. But otherwise, if he's distracted by other things, it won't work. So it's a general principle. Without focus, then there can't be. And focus only comes when there's knowledge. Right? Does that make sense? Anything else? Yes. So you somebody does austerity, they get a boon, then they change the austerity into the effects of the boon. Does it work like that? It means you perform austerity, there's a potency is there. Then that can be converted into whatever it needs to be converted into. Right? Just like you work at a job, you get money. Now, what you buy with that money, you have the free will, but you can only use the money for things that money works with. Right? Does that make sense? You can't use your austerities now to become God because it doesn't work. It's the wrong collateral. You ready? You understand? So that's the point, is it's converted. You can whatever. That's why one has to be very, very careful in the performance of your activities, that you do not perform them with the desire for material results. Otherwise, then even your spiritual activities can be converted. Right? Conversion rate's very high, but still not worth it. You can become Lord Brahma, right? Which is a huge amount of piety. Right? You can become Lord Brahma easier than you can become a devotee. Right? So to become Brahma takes less Sukriti than to become a devotee. So if you're taking devotional Sukritis and change them into pious Sukritis, you get a good result. The demigods, they do that. Right? And so then they get their position, their power, their authority, their vehicles, their good looks, their ornaments, all that from their austerity. Right? But they're not moving towards... But if as they remember Krishna, then they get benefited. Otherwise, indirectly, they're working for his government, so there's naturally side perks. You know, whenever he performs a pastime, you get to take part and stuff. So not bad. But it's not that they remember him or know who he is. Right? It means Krishna was present, but the Yadus, who are the demigods, thought he was Paramatma, Kirchak, Shai Vishnu. They couldn't understand that Pure is Swayam Krishna. Therefore, when the pastimes wound up, then they go back to their position as demigods, because they're remembering and serving Pure Dakshai Vishnu as demigods. But if they remember and understood him as Swayam Krishna, then they would actually go to the workout. Does that make sense? The Lord of the deity who gives you the boon. Okay, you do penance to Lord Brahma and he gives you a boon. So you're wanting to know, does he convert the austerity into boons? Do I catch a kind of theme here or something? Like that? Means one is, yes, he is converting it. That means he has potency. But in doing that means he burns some of his potency to give it. Right? Just like we see as there was Vishwamitra. You know, to keep up with with Vashishta, then he decides to give a boon to some common person to send him to the heavenly planets. The guy hasn't done anything, but with his own austerity, then he gives him enough of that to send him. But because he doesn't have the character, then Indra, by his potency, which is also not small, sends him back down. So this way the guy goes back and forth, you know, like a tennis match for a while. And then eventually Vishwamitra gets annoyed, and then he decides to create his own heavenly planet for him to be on. So he creates it, but he doesn't have enough potency to actually fit it into the universal orbit. Right? So therefore it's falling out of the orbit, it's going to crash onto the Earth. So this is a problem. So then the Lord has to step in and adjust these things. Right? So that means in giving boons, you are giving some of your own potency. That's why, if it didn't depend on potency, why would people go to potent persons for boons? Why wouldn't they just go to anybody for a boon? Right? You know what I'm saying? Like that. So it's the combination. You perform the austerity, therefore you have the qualification to receive the boon. Question is that it's said that the material energy is insurmountable, so is it actually the material energy is difficult to overcome, you know, to be established in devotional service, or is it our conditioned nature? Technically, Maya is an inferior potency of Krishna, and the soul is superior. So technically, any manifestation of Maya is illusion. It doesn't exist. It's just like, let's say we have this big room here, and at night it will be very dark. Let's say it's pitch black. Now if we light one candle, one small little candle, it dissipates the darkness. You can see the room. So that's the point. The jiva is more powerful than the material energy. But because of his attachment to being God and the enjoyer, therefore he submits himself to the material energy to try to enjoy it, because this spiritual energy is not going to allow it. So actually what's difficult to overcome is our idea that we are material energy, or we are the controller and enjoyer of the material energy. Right? So what it is that we have accepted to come under the control, right? Like that. Here it is out of affection for our own self and for what we're going to gain. Right? It's not that we have affection for material energy, but we just see that this is what we're going to gain. Just like we see is that the example of typical example given of that very powerful person, you know, who was then under the control of his grandson. Right? He's writing on his back and telling him to go here and there, though he manages the whole country. Right? So it's out of affection you put yourself under, because there's something to gain. So here the grandfather is feeling that by being under the control of this child, he will taste the happiness of this parental rasa, or especially in this way of the, you know, the grandfatherly interaction. Therefore, he puts himself under. But he's completely independent from this kid. He can survive very nicely without the kid. He runs the whole country. What does he need the kid for? Right? But for rasa, then one is dependent. Does that make sense? There must be others to interact with for there to be rasa. You don't have rasa with yourself. That's called atmarama. Right? And Krishna's already doing that. But to taste more, he expands. So that means there's more living entities. Does that make sense? Yeah, so because of this, therefore we want to enjoy, we put ourselves under the control of the material energy. And we're so attached that we will be successful. We don't want to give it up. That's why then the point is made, dukkha layena shashvatam. It's full of miseries, it's temporary. You're not going to get what you want. You want eternal happiness, right? Because that's the sin, right? I am the controller, eternality. I am the enjoyer, happiness, right? So we come to the material world, which is the opposite. So it has to be pointed out is the material world is temporary. So it doesn't have existence. Real existence is with Krishna. He is existence. By this verse, he is existence. So we have to bring that desire for eternal happiness in line with Krishna. He is bliss. Right? So when it's connected to him, it works. But we falsely connect the material energy. Therefore, the Shastra is telling us that this doesn't work. But we're so attached to the idea, we don't want to give it up. Right? Even though we're wrong, we don't want to take the time. Right? It's just like this. You've learned something, and let's say what you learn is old. It kind of works, but it's old. Now newer techniques have come in that are greatly superior. So you know these old ones, the young kids know all the new ones. They come in and start doing it, but out of attachment, because who you think you are in that, you don't want to give up your old ones. Just sit here and complain about the computers and the new phones. You got to go to university to figure out how to use a phone, you know? There's so many buttons on it. It used to be you just picked it up, and you put it down, and you turned the little things, and that was it. There wasn't anything else, you know? But now it's like so many things it can do. Push the wrong button, and you know, there's a lot of problem, right? But they just, you know, complain about it and don't really want to make the adjustment to it and try to somehow or another go on in their own way and figure out just enough to make it work how they need it. Right? When they could just, you know, throw that mentality out, get out the books, you know, and then start. That means that they know less than the kids. Right? And it's a very common thing that the parents are mortified that their kid may know more than them. I mean, sincerely mortified. Because of ego only. Right? Well, the standard is, we see from the scriptures, is the spiritual master is very happy if he sees his own students, his own disciples, progress faster and quicker and farther than him. That is parental ras. That's a guru. But the others where you're worried that they'll be greater than you means you're putting yourself on an equal level, so it's not parental rasa. Right? Does that make sense? So in the same way, the living entity makes this mistake that they've already done so many things, they've worked in so many ways, and taking up devotional service, one means I'm not going to be the supreme control and enjoyer, which is really there. But at the same time, there's so many new things. Just so many new things. And it's, so it's difficult. You know what I'm saying? So it's much easier to just go along with your conditioned nature that you've already gotten. Just, you know, blow up your ego a little bit more so that your ego is more impervious than the younger people's ego, so then you can maintain your position. But factually, it's not necessarily progressive. So the living entity, he just gets, you say it's wrong. No, but I'm this, I'm that, I'm a family person, I'm responsible, or I run a company, or I manage a country, or, you know, I manage this aspect of the universe, or I'm king of the universe, or I'm creator of the universe, but to give it up, I'm just a simple, humble servant of Krishna. Basically, means we have to give up the idea of I'm the controller enjoyer, and we have to give up the idea of I work so hard to become Lord Brahma. Right? Or Indra, or this, or that, or an adult. Right? You know, I went through a lot to become an adult, you know. So we just stick to these, the ego sticks us to this. So actually, that's why Krishna gives the option of just surrender to Krishna in a moment. Because it can be done. Right? There are many examples of persons in history who have done it. But if you can't, then you work on your conditioning by a progressive, you know, gradual or, you know, process that has, you know, stages and things that you can actually mark and see I'm getting somewhere. So you can start to change your identity. Right? you're a kid, then you become a brahmachari, right? Then you become a grihastha, then you become a vanaprastha, and yeah. So you feel the, you know, this, you feel you're progressing, you're giving up one identity, accepting a new one. So in the same way, it sets you for the principle, I give up the I am a conditioned soul to I am servant of Krishna. Right? You know what I'm saying? So therefore you can accept and move forward. All these things have a purpose, that's why it's there. Right? It means if you can't accept, it's just like I can't accept I'm in this position, so I perform those duties. But I want to perform all the duties, then that will make it you won't be able to be a devotee. Because a devotee is a devotee and God's God. Because you want to be a devotee and God. You know what I'm saying? They bleed through. That's why Prabhupada says it's impersonal, right? These mentalities. Impersonal is avoidism. It's that I will get things to work the way I want. But that's okay within the sphere of a relationship. So I don't want to limit myself to a particular circle of relationships. I want to have my options open for everything, including being God. Right? And then if we accept I'm not God, okay, then we cut it down. So that's progressive. But then I can do all the things that the devotees do. No, but we're the servant of the devotees. So then we have to give up that idea also. I'm not going to be Radharani or Mother Yashoda or Subala or Sridham. That spots are already taken. I can be their assistants. Right? So then I bring it back again. So I'm starting to realize the self-realization is increasing. Right? Like that. So then there. But then they already have their servants. So I can serve those servants. So slowly, slowly we get it closer and closer to who we actually are. Does that make sense? So it's a matter of giving up false identity and gaining the actual identity. But because we're so habituated, it becomes very difficult. So that's why it's insurmountable, because we're so convinced we won't give it up. You know, if it doesn't work in karma, we'll try jnana. If it doesn't that, we'll try yoga. If that doesn't, we'll take up, you know, avoidism. Right? So like that, we'll just keep going. So by the grace of the Lord, we come in contact with a devotee who tells you it's not this, it's that. Then, by practice, because of to overcome bad habit, then we actually bring it to that state. So by Krishna's grace, we can keep that association, keep that habit in that. But because we surrender to Maya, she will overcome us. Right? Does that make sense? Okay, so we'll end here. And then if there's any questions, we'll continue after. Yeah, just after. We'll send you class. No, 1 second. We're going to end the class. Then if you want to continue with lessons, then we'll go on, okay? Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhakti Pinda ki, Jaina Dai Go. You mentioned something, yes. But I'm not sure what point you're making. You mentioned that you have that, you're taking some special medicines and things like that.
I am taking Ayurvedic medicine.
Yeah.
Or
Very good. Good to see you back.
Thank you so much. Although I'm very good, very, very good medicine. Thank you.
So a question is coming up on Achinta Veda Veda Tattva. Basically, it just means simultaneously one and different. That's all. Because the principle is that we can accommodate that something's one, or we can accommodate that something's different. But to say it's simultaneously one and different, that's more difficult. But that is important to be able to accommodate if you want to deal with Vraja Krishna. Because in Vaikuntha, he is God. That's it. Right? But in Vraj, he's, you know, serving his devotees. So you have to be able to accommodate that. That Vishnu, things can still go back further. But with Krishna, everything that there is in the cosmic creation comes back to him. And this creation is going in all directions. That means that there's going to be, for every direction, there's an opposite direction also. Right? So if you're only taking the one direction, it works very nicely. Or if you say there's that way and there's this way, that's fine, but to say that they both function at once, that's more difficult. So that's a Chintaveda Tattva. So that's important to understand if you want to get into Vrindavan, because the person that you're going to worship there in Vrindavan is where everything comes back to and is simultaneously functioning. Consciousness. Okay. Are the living entities, are God creates with his shaktis, so is that, are they individual conscious living entities that have their free will? Yes. But even then, it comes down to the point that they're doing everything up to a particular point. Then at some point, the jivas, the conditioned souls, have to feel that they're taking part in creation. At that point, they're just empowered with the potencies of those personalities. Does that make sense? You know what I'm saying? This means that... Yeah. So, up to that point, the eternal associates are doing it. Just like Mahavishnu is there with all his eternal associates. He expands to Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, he's there with all his eternal associates. Hirudakshaya Vishnu is there with all his eternal associates. So they expand. But then that same potency that is there in the eternal associates then gets given to, let's say, someone like Indra to rule as king. So it's only the potency is there, but he's an individual, independent living entity. But it's not his power, it's the associate's power. It's the Shakti's power. So those Shaktis are independent living entities, but because Shaktis, in this case where the potency is coming from, is internal potency, the internal potency doesn't function separate from Krishna. So their independence, they will always serve Krishna. Right? Only the jiva is tatastha, so by nature, their independence can be manifest in connection with the internal potency or in connection with the external.
These Shakti
tattvas are only Vishnu tattvas or jiva tattvas. No, they're different. They're Shakti tattvas. I said Mahavishnu is present with his associates. The associates are the Shaktis.
So what they are not living entities. They are living entities.
They are living entities, yes. You're a living entity, you're a Shakti. You're an energy of Krishna. But you're an ascension being. So all his energies are conscious persons.
So basically what they are.
What's the difference between a Shakti? Because it's a different Shakti. They're internal potency Shakti and we're marginal Shakti. So we can make the mistake of being, and we're very small, they're very great. It means we're an individual soul, we're sitting here, we're here. but the internal potency can expand from the spiritual realm down to here and everything in between. So that works. Because in your bigger shaktis, they have so many smaller ones, and they have their expansions, they have their expansions, they have their expansions. Like that. It's the same person all the way through. But we're just 1/10,000th of a hair, that's it. You know. So we're here, we're in the spiritual world, we're there. Unless Krishna gives the potency, that we expand. But otherwise, the jiva is eternally assisting the internal potency. That's their position. They don't contact God directly, because that's not the way it is. You have God, you have potency, you have the jivas. Then you have external potency. It's just where it is. The twilight is always between day and night. Right? So that's where we are. We are always assisting the internal potency. That's our position. So that's... But in the past times, no distinction is really made. Right? They don't say, oh, this is internal potency devotee and this is jiva devotee. They don't make those distinctions. Right? Personalities will be made distinction, but the tattvas won't be made any distinction. Just like they don't distinguish between sandini, sandit, and ladini. That's for our understanding here in the spiritual world, they don't make those distinctions. Okay. Something else. Why do we have to suffer? Why does your finger have to hurt when you stick it in the fire? Right? Does that make sense? You don't have to stick your finger in the fire, so you don't have to suffer. Right? Yeah. But we suffer because we choose to. We like to suffer. So that's why we're here. Right? If we didn't like to suffer, we wouldn't be here. Right? So that's the whole thing. We like to suffer, we're here. That's mode of ignorance. Because if there's no mode of ignorance, there is no suffering. Does that make sense? Question comes up here, a very fine point of, how you say, religious principles. That the point is made that one should tell truth. But if the truth will cause death, then one will tell a non-truth to save a life. So then the question comes up that we can see that this is definitely a higher principle than sticking to, you know, truth and then having somebody die. So, therefore, applying it to Vasudev, why was he truthful when, how you say, it came to his six, the Satgarbhas, you know, the six sons that were killed by Kamsa? No, because there you would think he'd tell a lie. Two kind of points come, two veins of thought come from it. One is Okay, let's stick to the more factual, and the other one is very delicate. Very delicate. Means one is on the principle of, let's say, without your existence, how do you function? How do you progress? Right? The other then is dealing with others, interacting. So now in the beginning, if we look at the history, the facts, because that's the easiest thing for morality to latch on to, right? Is he had given his word as a Kshatriya that he would bring his children, and so he brought, because one, it would be probably very hard to hide the fact, you know, because one has children to interact. You know, so therefore it would be very hard to they are not known that they are there. Could do, but it's difficult, you know. Even later if he sent Krishna to Vrindavan, there was always a doubt, you know. But because of the nature of Krishna, he couldn't kill him. Otherwise, the attempts made were sufficient to kill anyone else. Right? He didn't have to go to that much trouble to kill the six sons. He went way beyond that to try to kill Krishna, but because it was Krishna, wasn't successful. So you could look at it that he went and he presented, and Vasudeva said, "Don't worry, because it's the seventh son. So I don't have to worry about all the other six." And so then Kamsa's very relaxed. But because Kamsa's relaxed, Krishna incarnates to save the devotees and establish religious principles. So, therefore, being desirous of the Lord's association, then it's pointed out to him that, well, you know, these demigods are against the demons. Maybe they lied to you, maybe they cheated you. So then he gets a doubt, so then it could have been any of the six. So then he starts his atrocious activities and starts pulling all the demons to him, because otherwise he's just sitting there very comfortably. You know, neither him or any of his friends are making any problem. But to deal nicely with the devotees, then you want a more close situation, right? The deeper relationship, the more focused it has to be, the more exclusive it has to be, you know? So then that means you already have to have the difference between the devotees and the demons. Then associating the devotees, it's more clear. Because if the devotees and demons are mixed, you can't get as close. Right? So like this, the more it's separated, then the more you can focus and taste the rasas. So we'll see is that, therefore when Krishna is present, all the different groups are very clearly delineated, because then you can have the clearest relationship with them, because rasa needs to be focused. So then from that side, then it would be created. So from the Lord's pastime that came up, but he was honest, but it only became a problem when Kamsa then also left the path of truth. You know, that it's only the seventh son, so that's, but when he left that and became doubtful, then only the problem started. Then another thing could be there is then after that, he was put into jail. It would be really hard to have a child and hide them in the prison, in the cell, without Kamsa knowing. So, I think after that it wasn't so much that he told him, but just the guards would say, another child is born. You know, so that would be, so it was only in the beginning. This brings us to the other point that's very fine, very delicate, delicate point. Is, we'll give a background of it just to give some standing. You sacrifice a member of the family to save the family to save the community to save a nation, and the whole world to save yourself. Because self-preservation is very important. Because without self-preservation, how do you progress? You know what I'm saying? So, therefore, one has to see that if he doesn't exist, nothing else exists. The family doesn't exist. So unless he preserves himself, right? So that means other aspects can go because he can create more children. But if he's gone, that's it. Just like a king, there's seven aspects of the kingdom. You know, he has his army, he has his treasury, he has so many things, then he has his prime minister, then he has himself. So the most important is himself. If he's there, he can restart a kingdom. Then if it's him and his prime minister, they can lose everything else, they're clever, they'll start it again. If he has that and he has his wealth, then he can create an army, he can do everything. But you know, it's like it can just keep... So the point is the self-preservation is important, but now here, how that self-preservation, that's the delicate point. Because in it, there's manifestation of relationships. So you could say that the witness is not pointing out because it doesn't affect him. He's going to be alive whether the other person dies or not. Right? So here it is a consideration of the other person. But he's a Kshatriya. He doesn't keep his word. As a Kshatriya, he doesn't exist. So therefore, him telling the truth and bringing the child is actually that element of self-preservation. He is, therefore, saving someone's life. And of the two, his is more important in this case. You know what I'm saying? But we will see that one person will sacrifice their life for another as long as it forwards and furthers and uplifts that relationship or the position. You know, like the king goes out and fights for the country because then everybody will get behind it. So even if he goes, because of that act of sacrifice, his legacy will be carried on by others. So in this way he will live. But not as one, possibly as many. Right? But if he sits back and doesn't, then no one will take him seriously. So there has to be seen as what is actually going to create the proper platform of that self-preservation, at the same time maintain the proper relationships and other things. Does that make sense? So it's a balance between the tattva and the rasa. Generally, it's the easiest things to throw truth into tattva. Because then it's mathematical. It's cut and dry. And though there is some subtleties, but less to consider. And then you can very easily feel that you're doing the right thing. But when you throw it into rasa, then there's so many things to consider that you have to actually be very thoughtful and considerate, and you can't just function on the platform of the mind. You know, the sentiment, which is interesting because you want to maintain your platform of the mind, the sentiment, but you use the tool of intelligence to maintain it. Rather than keep it consistent, you want to maintain that sentiment, but at the same time use the compatible aspect of the mind of considering the rasa. Therefore, it's said it's impersonal. It's not actually personal. You know, when you use the intelligence to clear it, when it's not the point. So that's why if you're going to switch it, then you have to move it to something else. There has to be something greater. But it actually has to be real. You can say, this is for the greater benefit of the society in general, so we sacrifice an individual. But you have to be right. You have to be that by sacrificing this individual, it is according to Shastra. And the society will be better. It can't be just that you think it's that way. Let us say the populace thinks that the king is too harsh on his punishments. So then, and therefore they're getting riled. Then he wants to establish his authority by bringing down punishment. Technically, you could say the people are out of hand. Yes, they should be brought into line. But now by using that, even though he can say it's true, so he sacrifices this one individual who is a rabble-rouser for the benefit of the whole kingdom, actually he's going to lose his whole kingdom. Because by that, then it brings out the sentiment of the people that now they throw out the relationship with the king. Before that, they were also functioning. He's the king. We're the citizens. But by his using that, it threw them into that, you know, out, you know, like this. It's delicate. Then he has to consider the citizens aren't happy. So therefore, why? Because they feel the punishments that have been given. So that means either it is correct or they're uneducated. So in other words, I have to in some way, if they're correct, have to correct the situation, maintain my position as the king and their position as the citizens, but they feel protected. Or I have to educate them about actually what is the good and bad of things, and actually what I've done is correct. They don't see the bigger picture that if that wasn't done in that harsh way, then the whole society would have been lost and then there would have been problems. Does that make some sense? So that is why the example is given that while being beaten by a low-class man, though he is absolutely sinless, and there's no reason to be beaten, that when questioned in a situation where the person that is doing you the wrong could be justly punished right in front of your eyes, you know, how much satisfaction is there in that? And he is doubtful that this person is actually the cause of my trouble, because he's trying to take into consideration all the elements. Because of that, in that situation, therefore Parikshit Maharaj could understand that this bull is none other than Dharma personified. Because no one else, most others would take the justice option. Right? Like that. Or they could be a sage and they just are take a philosophical, but the Lord's left out. But they take that complete picture that includes relationships, that's Dharma. You know? Does that make some sense? Yeah, so that's why. But now, just in being practical on this, one could say, okay, very nice, I have to consider this, but now a difficulty comes up. How does one, it's just like in the classroom, it sounds great. But when you get out into the field, just like you hear something in the class, you think, yeah, that's right, you know, I should be more forgiving and all this. And then you walk out of the class and you're forgiving, and maybe you see somebody and says, yeah, I guess I shouldn't be so, you know, harsh on them, and offer your bases to the deities. You walk outside and your shoes are gone. And, yeah, what is this nonsense? I come to the temple, who is this guy? You know, they should catch them, they should punish them. You know, it's... So the point comes down is that it's by having the knowledge, contemplating in the various situations of your life and trying to apply it, that when the situations do factually arise in their acute state, you can actually apply them with success. Otherwise, you'll always revert back generally to whatever level of practice and habit that you and values that you've developed unconsciously. You know, so that's why contemplation is so important. You know, a devotee being thoughtful or being sober is so important, because then they're able to apply these things in their life. Otherwise, then it becomes theory, and then we fall prey to being real, being realistic, which they generally put onto mundane truth to solve it, because anything more would require intelligence and require expending time thinking about it. And with lack of patience, lack of humility, lack of tolerance, it becomes very hard. You know what I'm saying? So that's why it's always given as part of the devotional process to contemplate the philosophy and practice it, and understand and contemplate the etiquette and practice it. And in those areas that we don't, it makes it very easy. It's just like, if you can respect that Radharani is senior, or Mother Jashoda is senior, or Subal and Sridharma are senior, therefore they're the devotees and I'm the servant. But it's how are you going? It's going to be very easy to understand if your parents are senior, your teachers are senior, the leaders of society are senior. You know, then it becomes very easy because the concept of there's somebody senior, and because of that, they get to do things you don't get to do, but you can take part with them in doing what they're doing under their direction. So because we haven't necessarily contemplated this important, essential point of devotional service, you know, the quintessence, but we're I think trying to move it into a adverb here. Quincentation, whatever it is. It's there, but I can't. Quintessential. Okay. Because they can all be created. It's just people nowadays have lost their flair for vocabulary. So, because we haven't extended it to everything in our life, at least we follow the etiquette. The Vaishnava etiquette can accept seniors, and that's a step forward. But more than that, we just follow the etiquette and we accept seniority. So therefore, even in a mundane, we haven't thought of listening to my mother has a concept of hearing from authority, and that means hearing from Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra means following what Krishna wants. Right? So maybe we haven't brought it to that level. But at least we're doing and we don't make trouble. You know, and then rasa can go on the proper things, and then slowly as I contemplate it, then I understand, yes, that's what's important. Because otherwise, what's important about the mother? Because the mother means if she's just saying her own opinion, what's the use? But her opinion is supposed to be based on authority, Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. Therefore, there's parampara, therefore, you know, so like that, then it works. You know. Or, I'm an authority, and so therefore now I'm a parent, so therefore kids should do what I say, but what I'm saying should be according to authority. It's not that just because I said it, because parenthood doesn't stand on its own. It has to be empowered with Krishna's potency of parenthood. So that degree that you follow according to authority, to that degree one will call this good parenting. Does that make sense? So, like that, then the application is very important. Is that okay? Something else? Yeah, something else? No? Yes. So you're saying that, oh, the same mistake you're seeing with Parikshit Maharaj forgiving Kali as in, who? Prithvi Chauhan forgiving Muhammad Gordi that he came so many times and defeated. No, it could say that the mistake wasn't that he forgave Muhammad Gordi. The problem was that in the 18th time he didn't defeat him. Yeah, and then you go on until, you know, this, what do you say? Muhammad Gori dies or gets frustrated and goes away. See, the point is if someone surrenders, a king has to afford protection. It's one of the rules. But in affording protection doesn't mean that they can continue doing their nonsense. They have to be banished. You know what I'm saying? So Muhammad Ghori comes, he does his thing, but if he didn't surrender, then naturally he's prisoner or he would be killed in the battlefield or that. It wasn't that he, but there must have been, Dan was clever enough to surrender. Right? So because of surrender, as a Kshatriya, he has to afford that protection. But we probably check whether he let him go with his armies or not. If he took everything from him and then had his men, you know, in a pleasant way, take him outside the kingdom and leave him. You know, like that. So that's there. That he also could have. I mean, there was no reason that the kings of India didn't build a fort across the Khyber Pass. They could have done that also. Right? It's not that big. It's big, but not that big. But most likely they left it because that would be the passage through which the, you know, great personalities would move back and forth. Because previously Arya Desh in Satyuga would be around the Caspian Sea, right? And it would extend down to here. So that would be the way to move back and forth. Because you notice it's the pass isn't out towards this way, it's towards the north. So it's through the north, then over into that area of Central Asia. So that would be a natural route. So that's probably why it wasn't closed. Does that make sense? Okay. Kali surrendered. Brigid has to afford him protection. It's just the way it is. Right? Otherwise, how is he a king? Right? The point of being king is not to exercise absolute control. I mean, we're not discussing here Machiavelli. Right? We're discussing here is a king is like a father. So there's certain things he does that are there. Because otherwise, if he doesn't forgive this, how would he forgive his own children? So there must be that forgiving nature if there's surrender. It's just the nature of parental rasa. Otherwise, why is it parental rasa? Why is he the king? Does that make some sense? So it's just inherent in the relationship. Right? So if there wasn't all these things, how do you make the mix? Why do we need dharmashastra? Why do we need etiquette? Because each of these relationships has its natural field, but also therefore has its weakness. The parent gives everything for the child. Whatever they feel is best, they give to the child. They give all their energy that to the child. Very essential, very important. By doing that, the child feels supported and protected and properly nourished, and they get a complete personality. Right? But when it comes to establishing standards, it's not a good position. Right? Therefore, Krishna created a teacher. Right? Because the teacher can do things that the parent can't. Right? And the parent does things that the teacher doesn't do. Does that make sense? So, therefore it's essential like that. And if this is understood, then the social fabric is complete. Otherwise, it's got holes in it. Does that make sense? So you must consider the whole picture, then it starts to work. Right? So there will be a weakness there. Kunti herself, Draupadi herself, Yudhishthir, Arjuna, Bhima, in the Mahabharata many times say they curse the Kshatriya codes. Because of that, there they are. Arjuna is having to kill his own brother, Karna. But he can't not do it. They have to go out there, and on the battlefield, Arjuna doesn't just see. This is the scenario that Arjuna wants to see. He says, Krishna, drive my chariot out into the midst of the army so I can see who has come to fight for the evil-minded Duryodhana. And he's going to ride out there and he's going to see Duryodhana. He's going to see all of his brothers. He's going to see Karna. He's going to see Shakuni. And he's going to see some other kings that have, you know, in the past have proven their, you know, lack of loyalty to the, you know, the Pandavas. And that, and he's going to then, after looking at them and looking with the, you know, the sternness of a Kshatriya, you know, you might, you know, I hope you said goodbye to your loved ones. Then he's going to turn around and look at his army, which is going to be everybody else who is favorable. Bhishma is there, Drona is there, Kripa is there, you know, all the other relatives and family members and all the supporting kings are going to be there, and then with satisfaction he'll ride back into the line, take his place, pull out his conch shell, blow it, and the fighting will start. Right? Isn't it? That's what Arjuna expected to see and happen. And that's what was thought for 13 years in the forest would happen. It didn't happen. Right? It means half his relatives are on the other side. People he would never fight with. Shalya would not have ended up with them, but he gave his word. Right? Does that make sense? That's why we hear stories about Brahmins and Kshatriyas. It's inspiring that someone said something, they stick to it, even if they lose themselves. Right? Even in modern times, do we ever hear stories of somebody's, of a big businessman's personal life? Is it ever a theme of big novels and movies and that? No. Why? Because their word means absolutely nothing. They give you their word, but then if some other more profitable thing comes up, they break it. But their business is to make profit, not to lose. The Kshatriya's business is to establish Dharma. Whether he's the king or his son's the king or someone else, that's another thing. Right? That's why I say it's not Machiavellian to hold on to the throne no matter what. The point is to perform your duties properly as a king. That's the purpose. But the businessman is just to make money. That's all. You know, he should be careful, because if he's not careful enough, he'll develop enemies, there'll be problems. So therefore, it wasn't profitable. But profit is his point. But the king is, religion is his point. Truth. For the Brahman, it's Kshatriya. I mean, it's Shastra. Right? That's the point. Does that make sense? He could have sacrificed? Hili. He could have sacrificed Kali. But the point is Kali surrendered. You're missing the point. But he surrendered. It's just the way it goes. Yes, sir. Why once a day? Many times. So we many times tell Krishna we surrender, but at the same time we are experiencing the we continue to be punished. It probably could have been, you could say, it was from the heart. Kali and probably Muhammad Ghori, probably at the moment, they were probably quite sincere in their mood of surrender. But later on, their bad habits came up, you know. They again took up. So when they again take up, then we see that, that Prithviraj is not just leaving it, he's going out and fighting. You can't say, oh, he surrendered, I don't fight with him. No, he's back fighting. So Kali, as long as he was surrendered and stayed in his places, he's keeping his side of the bargain. But then when he extends beyond it, then that is there. Because as it is, as we know it, that unless Krishna allowed it, it couldn't happen. Means this kid didn't have the potency to give a curse that was more powerful than Maharaj Pariksha. But because he understood it in his own way, this is the Lord's desire, therefore he allowed it to run. And because of that, we are sitting here today hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. Otherwise we wouldn't be sitting here today. You know, like this Sunday morning, you'd be watching, you know, the morning entertainment, you know, sitting in bed, like that. So that's why we're here. So that was, you know, a special thing, a great thing. So ultimately it goes back to what Krishna desires, ultimately, because otherwise that can explain everything. Because otherwise it doesn't necessarily seem to make sense. So we do surrender, and probably at that moment that we're saying that, we really mean it. Because generally you can tell when you don't mean it, you know, but you mean it. But we become distracted by everything, just like Kali and Muhammad Gauri become distracted by their own conditioned nature, and then again take up their nefarious activities. So because of that, then it goes. Because if we were surrendered and maintained it, then the threefold miseries would attack us, but it wouldn't bother us. It's only because we're not surrendered it bothers us. You know, health is bad, but if you're not worried about the body, what do you care? You know, if the body is necessary for some service, therefore you keep it going. Just like you need a car, you know, to do your service, to go out of sankirtan, therefore unless you maintain the car, your service will be hampered. So one day you have a flat tire or an engine stops or run out of petrol because you didn't maintain it, because we're just serving Krishna, we don't worry about all this maya. So then it becomes part of it. But if it's not part of it, it doesn't matter whether you go by car or go by walk, then the car doesn't work, then it doesn't bother you, just walk. But if you become attached to the car, then, oh, the car broke down, how did Krishna allow this, now I have to walk. You know, then you'll feel the modes of nature. But the other is, okay, Krishna took away the car. He doesn't want me going in such opulence, or I become proud or attached. She's taken away, so now I'll walk. You know, now I can meet so many people. I can preach. Is that okay? Anything else? No. Yeah, this will be the last question that we'll start. Yes.
Who's standing behind Kali?
Who's standing behind Kali? Who's his boss? Who does he work for, right?
He's not independent.
Who's who's in charge of the Yuga cartel here, you know? Means with all the different potencies of Krishna that are what we would consider positive, good qualities, they are good qualities because there's a negative quality. You can only have good if you have bad. Right? You know what I'm saying? If let's say I'm in a place where everybody puts sugar into everything in the same amount, and no one in that place has ever tasted anything other than that, so will the people of that place call the preparation sweet? Oh, this is a nice sweet. No. Only a person coming from somewhere else will go, everything they cook is sweet. Am I in Gujarat here? You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So, it's good because it's bad. Means they go together. Means they're perfectly combined in Krishna. But he expands all the energies for rasa. And rasa means you have to differentiate. How do you have parental rasa if every lady is your mother? Or why every lady? Why differentiate ladies? Just anything is. But then why differentiate anything? Just yourself. So then you're back to Atmaram. So from yourself you have to extend, okay, you know, women, on women, senior women, on senior women, you know, then those who have a close relationship. And of those with a close relationship, those who have given birth to you. Then you can start to, the relationship becomes more and more specific. Right? All senior women you're nice to, you're pleasant to. But those who are like your aunts, and you know, those, then it's more specific. You render service. The other ones, you're just nice and, you know, cordial. Then with them, it's more specific. With your own mother, then you see them. Does that make sense? So that's, it's natural, right? That one has to make distinction. So for rasa, distinction has to be there. Right? So that's why, if you really want to understand Braj, you have to understand Achindabheda and Atatva. You have to be able to accommodate the good and the bad. The person's bad, but he's working, it's the law, he is Kali. It is the age. People do want to be in Maya. I mean, serious Maya. So this person ensures it happens. Nothing happens by chance, it happens by management. So this guy is going to manage that this age is bad so that people can taste it.